Well, I can speak without this if you can hear me.
No, the fan is on. You should use that.
Okay. The masters have spoke. You're the masters, right? Okay. I'm going to try to use my 10 minutes well. First, I want to give you a historical perspective as to why we are even engaged in a struggle for community control of the police. This has been a problem in the African-American community since slavery, you know. The original way that we were policed was with the paddy wagons and the slave patrols. And then for a brief period in history, black people were given us some semblance of political independence during the black Reconstruction era, in which we actually controlled the police in our communities for a short period of time, backed up, of course, by the Union League, backed up, of course, by black Union troops. So it was by the force of arms that we were able to do that. And that only lasted for about 10 years. There's only been two revolutions in this country, the one in 1776 and the one in 1861. The one in 1861 abolished black people as property, not necessarily as slaves, but as property. You could no longer buy and sell black folks, but you could enslave them, you know. So I'm not going to get into all of that. But the main thing about it is that the policing system went from the slave patrols to another kind of patrol. Somebody just recently wrote a book called Occupied Territory about the police in black communities. And he says something that strikes a chord with me, and that is that we are over-patrolled and under-protected. Well, the whole entire purpose of the police in the African-American community is to control that community. Why do they need to control it? Because the conditions that exist there are conditions that are always ripe for rebellion. You know, high unemployment rates, on the bottom of the social scale in terms of everything, not just employment, but housing, you know, medical services, you name it. And then open discrimination and that sort of thing. So these are conditions that automatically create social unrest and movement. And so to address that, you need the police. This came out very clear during the 60s when we were trying to overthrow Jim Crow in the South. The main obstacles to us in that battle was the police. You know, some of them became internationally famous, like Bull Connors in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, Jim Clark in Mississippi. And then before the 60s were over, before the civil rights movement was finally laid to rest by the forces of repression, we had a situation here, not only in Chicago, but all across the country, where the Black Panther Party rose up and placed this as a principal demand, that the police not only be watched, that we had not only a right to watch them and monitor what they do, but that we also had a right to control them in terms of how they operate in our community. And so the whole question of community control of the police rose very sharply in the mid and late 60s, mainly the late 60s, and it was the Black Panther Party that did that. Fred Hampton and Mark Clark were murdered here in Chicago in 1969, in December of 1969. They were the leaders of the Black Panther Party here in Chicago. And one of the principal demands that they raised as the leaders of that party was community control of the police. In fact, they built the first citywide rainbow coalition to fight for that demand. So what we're doing in the Chicago Alliance Against Race and Political Repression is really a continuation of what was started by the Black Panther Party in the immediate sense of the word, but also part of a long historical tradition going all the way back to slavery. And the resistance to slavery and the resistance of Jim Crow and racial discrimination and so on. So when we raise it here in Chicago, we also have to acknowledge the fact that in Chicago we are commemorating the 100th anniversary of the Red Summer. The Red Summer in Chicago occurred in 1919. Do you know what happened in the Red Summer? A lot of people don't, so let me just recite a couple of things. It was called the worst riot the worst race riot in American history up to that point. Why was it called the worst? Okay, it was called the worst. I'm getting a blank look here. It was called the worst because it was the race riot, quote unquote race riot. It was really pogroms against the black community. It was one of the first where a resistance was put up, where black people engaged in armed resistance in defense of themselves, where not only did black people get killed, but some white people got killed also. And so that made it the worst, you know. It was the worst by those racist standards. So Chicago, we have a 100th anniversary in terms of our struggle against the police around this issue, because it was police who led those riots in many cases. They actually led mobs to go into the black community to murder and kill people, just like they led the assassination of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark almost 60 years later or more. So this is the background. Presently, what we're dealing with is this. We have raised the question of community control of the police by introducing into the city legislature an ordinance that will enact, if enacted, will create a civilian police accountability council, which takes the power out of the hands of the mayor and the city council and puts it in the hands of the people when it comes to regulating the police force, not monitoring the police force, not oversight over the police force. In other words, we would write the manual on police conduct. We're not talking about input, we're talking about control. And everybody else is talking about input, that we're entitled to some input. No, we're not entitled to input. We're entitled to control. It is our inalienable democratic right to say who polices our communities and how our communities are policed. That's a fundamental democratic demand. We want to look at what the police do. That's not a democratic demand. Oversight can often mean overlooked. You get my point? That's what oversight has meant in the city of Chicago. Everything that we've had here, the independent review board, the police board, everything that we've had here that was supposed to have been oversight ended up being overlooking, justifying, and excusing the police, not really holding them accountable. So we're talking about a law that would create an all-elected, all-civilian police accountability council, which would not be overseeing the police, but be controlling how our communities are policed and who polices them. The who is a very important question. Who means we don't want no racist, Ku Klux Klan-minded cops patrolling our communities. We don't want racial profiling. We don't want people stopped and searched and humiliated just because they're black or brown. So it's very important that we say who. That should be a residential requirement. Those who police our community should reside in our community. So CPAC says yes to this. It also says how our communities are policed. The way our communities are policed now is very corrupt. Everybody knows that the police are working with the drug dealers and whatnot to get their payoffs. They look at drug dealers like a money cow. So they come and do their shakedowns and whatnot. You can stay on the streets and peddle your dope or whatever it is you're peddling, you know. Everybody knows that this goes on. There was a time when you knew what a crack house was because you would see a long line in front of it going all the way around the block. Now, if you could see it, the police could see it. They got eyes too. They're trained to see it, but they wouldn't see it until certain hours. They would allow the crack dealers to operate for certain hours, get their money, and then they run them off the streets. And if somebody didn't pay up, then they got busted. So they created these rivalries between the gangs and whatnot based on turf and so forth and so on, based on drug dealing. Everybody knows this goes on. But the police are not going to police themselves. So it takes community control to stop this. One time I was talking to somebody about, supporting CPAC, a black person, and they said, well, what about all this crime in our community? What about it? Are the police doing anything about it? So what we're saying to you is, you need to control the policing. So then you don't have to ask me that question. If you control the policing, then I can ask you what's going on and you can tell me. So it's the answer to all of this. Police crimes, we say stop police crimes. Police crimes are connected to all crimes. If the badge is above the law, then, then there is no law, except as they make it, to their choosing, based on their racist predilections and prejudices. So we have to stop that. And we can stop that through community control of the police. Now, let me know when I'm getting close to the end. What has happened in Chicago is a number of advances have been made. We got a black mayor who's a woman and who's also a member of the LGBTQ community. And that was a step forward. We don't argue with that or debate that. But in terms of community control of the police, it was not a step forward. Because that mayor, as a member of the police board, stonewalled us for years. And so we're not deluded by any of this. We know that we got a fight on our hands there. When we had the elections, a number of candidates ran beating the CPAC drum, saying that they were for CPAC. We got 13 of them here that still say they're for CPAC. But immediately after the elections were over, four jumped ship. And we actually 17 people got elected that had CPAC in their platforms. Four immediately jumped ship. One of them had been with us for quite a while. That was Howard Brookins. One that just came aboard, that was Veal. And then there was Pat Dow, who never was really with us. And who else?
David Moore,
who joined up during the election campaign. So some of these people got on board with CPAC just to get elected, or just to keep a challenge out of their ward. And then we got the 13 who didn't jump ship immediately. And then the mayor announced that she was going to put in, within 90 days, that she was going to put GAPA, the Grassroots Alliance, the Grassroots People's Alliance? Of police accountability. And the reason why I'm doing that now, I just gave you some history, right? For 60 years, almost 60 years, at least 50, for 50 years, this struggle has went on in Chicago, led by the left, led by us. For the last 7 years, we've had a campaign for Civilian Police Accountability Council, led by us. So these people showed up in the ninth inning with all of the bases loaded to claim a home run, right? And they called themselves GAPA. We'd never heard of them before, And we'd been out there on the streets in the community. We had, when they showed up, we had 60,000 supporters. They had a list of organizations, most of whom did nothing around this issue. Some of whom did, but their main parent was the Community Renewal Society, which had been arguing with us for a couple of years about us watering down CPAC, and we refused to do it. Because you don't water down your demands before the fight. You don't do that. You have to have a fight first. Things got to get a little bloody. And then we talk about demands. We negotiate demands, It's like a union going in and trying to negotiate demands before the strike. How does that work? So we wouldn't do it. And so they came up with an organization They help parent an organization that will do it. And that was GAPA. So now, when our people heard that Lightfoot, Mayor Lightfoot, was going to introduce GAPA into the city council, they was pretty sure that it was going to pass. So we had another course of jumping ship. You know? So people jumped ship here, in this instance, to join up with her because they were opportunists. I'm going to just say it like it is. You know, this is politics. It's not about hurting anybody's feelings. It's about telling the truth, you know. They were opportunists, and they said, well, her bill is going to pass, so we want to be part of that. Well, what about CPAC? Well, you know, we get to that later. But right now, her bill is going to pass, and we want to be part of it. So we said, no, you shouldn't be a part of it. You should stand firm with what you said in the elections. You said you was for CPAC. You didn't say you was for CPAC and GAPA. At least most didn't say it. Now, one of them did say that. But the rest of them did not say that. So stand firm with CPAC. If you stand firm with CPAC, it's a good chance that her bill won't go through. But whether it goes through or not, be consistent with what you said to the people. You said you wanted community control of the police, so stand up for that. Stand up for that. Like Malcolm X said, if you don't stand up for something, you'll fall for anything. So stand up for it. And at first, just two stood up for it that we knew about. And then we started calling people and lobbying people and putting pressure on people, and then it went from two to what we got here now. What? I got to count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. And I thought we had 7, but, you know, things go back and forth here. So here's what the fight is about now. The fight is about getting those who came out the gate for CPAC to stay with it. And the other fight is to double our numbers. We need to go from 13 to 26. From 13 to 26. We're not going to get there. We're not by making deals with Mayor Lightfoot. That's not going to happen. This is going to take a mass struggle, and we have to be a part of it. Our main focus has always been organizing people in the community. Grassroots don't mean nothing if you can't count people. We're counting 60,000 plus. These are people that we have talked to. These are people whose names and addresses and phone numbers that we have, emails that we have, and so forth and so on. This is how you build a movement. So our slogan is, we're going to organize in this movement door by door, block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood, ward by ward, district by district. We don't see it working any other way. Now, a mass movement takes a lot of hard work. It's not easy building a grassroots movement, but it's not easy making a revolution either. You say you're socialist. I don't know if you got a plan on getting to socialism without a revolution, but if you do, let me know about it. The thing of it is that, I don't want to open up any ideological discussions. The thing of it is that in order for us to get this bill passed, we're going to have a grassroots movement in this city. Is it 10 minutes up?
Yeah.
Okay. I had to ask. They was going to let me go on. So in order to make that happen, we're going to have a grassroots movement, and you're going to have to be a part of it. Otherwise, why are we having this meeting? That's it.